to a special replay of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. This program originally aired October 30th, 1993. Please do not call.
Once again, here I am. Hi, everybody. What a program this morning, huh? And it's all you. Thank you very much for a very, 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 very unnerving, entertaining, provoking evening. We're telling ghost stories, real ghost stories. If you have one, feel free to join us. If you don't, sit back and listen. Turn out the lights if you dare and the radio up. And you may well may want to tell us as the morning wears on how you're doing. Line one, you're back on the air again.
Okay.
And now, Pahrump, Nevada.
Yeah. I was playing football for him, and I think I was a junior, and we had an away game. So I was on the varsity bus, and my sister was on the junior varsity bus. And for some reason, the junior varsity bus got way behind us. And so we showed up at the high school, and I had the car with me. And so I decided to just stay there and wait for my sister with the car. And after everybody had left, I got in the car, and I laid the seat back just to go to sleep. And then next thing I noticed, the bus, the JV bus came, and I could see people walking out. I could hear the voices. I recognized the voices. Then I woke up and looked out, and nothing was there. I didn't think much of it, because, you know, I just thought, oh, I'm just dreaming.
Dreaming, yeah.
I went back to sleep, and I saw the exact same thing again. I saw the bus, saw the people getting out of the bus, heard the voices, but this time I knew I was dreaming, and I tried to wake up, and I had a hard time, but finally I woke myself up, looked out, and there was nothing there. So then I decided to go back to sleep. You know, that was a little scary, but I went back to sleep, and I saw the exact same thing, only this time I saw my sister walk up to the side of the car. She had one of her friends with her, and she was asking to be let in. And this time, and I knew I was dreaming again, but this time I had a real hard time waking up. And finally I had to scream just to wake up. And that time I decided I'm getting out of here. And so I just went home and decided to wait for the phone call at home. And I've grown up in the country, so, you know, being out in the country alone at night never really bothered me, but this really did. And
I understand. I think it odd that you knew you were in a dream. I've never had that experience. My dreams have always been as reality until I woke up and knew, you know, when you wake up, you know, you had a dream, right?
Uh-huh.
But I've never known in a dream that I was dreaming. That's odd.
And I lived about a half a mile from one of those houses of ill repute that you talk about. So you know how far I had to drive home.
I do. I thank you for the call.
All right, thanks.
And, yes, indeed. I know the area. Good morning on our phone. Oh, you would have been. Wildcard line 3, instead you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. I have a little story. This goes back to, about the early 70s.
Where are you?
I'm calling from Linwood, Washington.
All right.
AVI, my name's
yes.
Tom. I was traveling across Nevada from Idaho down to California, and it was early in the morning, and I was outside of Winnemucca about 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and I was by myself, and I'm out of breath. Okay. As I was driving along, it was out in the desert area, and there was absolutely virtually uninhabited.
Right.
And a car came up behind me with two inhabitants who they started following right on my bumper. And I became concerned because it became apparent that they were really interested in getting me stopped. And they would pull up alongside and motion me over and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was afraid that, you know, I was afraid they were going to to...
assault you, rob you, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sure, that'd be natural.
So, as we went along, this played out for several miles, and they kept motioning for me to pull over, and they come up alongside, and I became quite fearful. Well, the oddest thing happened. I had a flat tire, and I could feel the car start to sway.
Sure.
And I pulled up to a stop, and off to the right was a house, and this car pulled up along and stopped behind me, and I didn't know what to do. I was afraid to get out, and somebody came out of this house to a pickup that was running. I mean, this was the only house in the area. There was nothing else around.
Right.
And he walked out and he looked, and one of the people in the car pointed to this guy, and then they went ahead and pulled on by me and took off. So I got out and I looked at the man, and he was doing something around the pickup, and so I went ahead and got my tire out and changed it and went on my way. Well, this left, you know, it made me quite fearful.
Yes.
Well, on the way back from California back to Idaho, I looked for this place. I wanted to stop, and it left such a mark on me psychologically.
Sure.
I found the place. It was totally uninhabited. No windows, no doors. Just a little shack.
Yes. And what do you think happened to you?
I mean, I honestly don't know. I honestly feel that something kept me from being harmed.
Something wanted to warn you.
Yes.
Well, that's
these two guys away is what happened.
That's quite a story. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good morning. On our first time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
where are you, sir?
I'm in Reno.
Reno.
Hey, my name's John. I'm from, I'm in Sparks. I've been listening to your show on spooks and goblins here. And let me turn down this radio.
No, just actually turn it off all the way. Just extinguish it.
There, it's out.
Right.
And I got an interesting story. My wife... my ex-wife used to dabble with Ouija boards and what have you, and I understand exactly how you feel. I can hear it in your voice, but we were horsing around with it one night, and the following weekend, I'd gone out fishing with a friend of mine and came back later that evening, and we watched TV for a while, and then we went to bed, I guess about 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. And the back door of the house and the front door of the house were in line with each other. And our bedroom was at the other end of the house.
Right.
And I was just dozing off, and I swore I heard the back door open. And somebody in heavy boots closed the door and walked through my kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I went to my dresser drawer, and I grabbed my 9mm, and I took it out, and I'm standing in the hallway thinking, God, I hope I don't have to do this. I got locked and loaded, and I swung out into the hallway, and there was just enough residual light in the living room where I could see the silhouette of this individual, about 6'3", pretty stocky person. And I uttered some explicatives, deleted, and told him to freeze right where he was, or I was going to dump him. And you remember the old window shades where you take and you pull them down, you let them go, and they just go up and spin around?
Very well, yes.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what happened to this silhouette.
Oh, you're...
Straight up.
Really? Just like a window?
Just like the old window shades. It just went straight up and vanished. And that was a very puckering experience, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
And I'll never forget it. That we had other interesting happenings in that house, too. We had clocks that would mysteriously just slide off the shelf and drop onto the floor for no reason at all.
Well, this has been sphincter tightening enough for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a really great show. I want to get off the air and listen some more.
All right. Thank you. Have a good morning. Oh, boy. That's pretty descriptive, like a window. Like that. That's the kind of thing that will put you on your knees for a while. Line 3, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Chris in Carson City.
Hi, Chris.
I'm calling. This is a story that my brother told to me.
All right.
And I have no doubt that it's true. He doesn't engage in lying. But my brother was taken in that. First of all, my father passed away in June of 91, and he had a very sudden heart attack. I mean, I had dinner with him an hour before, and he was perfectly fine. We were joking, and
people always say that he was fine.
He was, and we were joking about a local casino there where I like, and he didn't. He was saying, "Well, if I go in there to cash a check with you, I've got to take a shower because it's so greasy," you know. And he was just joking.
Yeah.
And it was very sudden. Nobody was expecting it. He died very quickly in his rocking chair in a candy bar. And about 6 months later, my brother was taking a nap. He worked graveyard, and he had to sleep during the day. And he had somebody watching his children in the other room. Well, in his dream, he heard a phone ring. Now, he has no phone in his bedroom.
Mm.
In his dream, he heard the phone ring, and he picks up the phone, and it's my father on the other end of the line. Now, my father was a compulsive gambler, and I think one of the things that killed him was the stress of having gambled away everything that he and my mom had.
Guilt.
And my brother said that he heard casino noises in the background, and the noises of slot machines, and he could tell that my father was calling from a casino.
Yes.
He said, I need to talk to you, and I need to make it quick. I've gambled away all my prayers, or I've cashed in all my prayers to make this call to you. And apparently, the way my dad said, he said, the way my dad had it, people pray for you, and the prayers are part of the economy of this place where he was. And as many prayers as people prayed for you, that was the things that you could do. And he was using all his prayers to make this call. And he said, I have a message for you. He said, you're going to die within a year, but that's not the message. I have a more important message that I really need to get to you. And before he could get the message to my brother, the phone went dead, and my brother woke up. He came out of the room, and he didn't think much about it except that it was a dream and the stress of my father having passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And my little niece came in and said, Daddy, who called you, and why is there a phone in your room? And now, it's been 2 years. My brother isn't dead. And so I kind of discounted the whole thing, except that my mom said that there are different ways of dying. Now, when my dad died, my brother was always dependent on my dad for everything and never really could hold a job, never really could do anything. As soon as my dad died, my brother started going to college. He started getting work, getting a job.
Doing all the things that had your dad lived, he would have wanted him to.
I think that my dad was saying that, hey, the old Dan is going to die in a year. There's going to be a new Dan. That's the way I see it, that there's a responsive, there's a totally different man, responsible, taking responsibility in his life, doing the things in his life that he should be doing.
I've got you. I've got
to go. I would like to know, though, what the other message was.
I can imagine. Thank you for the call. Thank you for the story, and a good one it was. Now, there's lots of ways to die. Line 1, you're on the air.
Good morning. This is Joyce Button from Papanish, Washington.
Hi, Joyce.
How are you doing this morning?
Fine. Just fine.
Good. Oh, well, first off, I wanted to tell you that I'm an Indian woman, and I really can identify with some of the things your callers have been saying. But I wanted to talk about Uncle Joe.
Uncle Joe, all right.
If you can remember that fellow.
I do very well, yes.
Okay. I was married in 1977 to a man that, they have a long book. I guess it dates back years and years ago. And really wasn't paying a whole lot of attention to what was going on in his life. But being an Indian woman, there's a lot of spirituality in my own family line. But I thought it was really strange is how both of us kind of came together and a lot of really weird things were happening in our life. Of course, we're not married anymore, thank God. But at the time, I didn't really understand what was going on with him. But looking back on it, I'm kind of scared that if I ever see him again, it'll be right before I die. Because that fellow said, well, I got to go see Uncle Joe. Everywhere he went, and I know that his family, they were older, but he would go, like, to see, you know, he'd want to go see his aunt or his uncle or whatever, and right before he got there, they'd already be gone. And the same thing happened with the teacher that...
It would be just a sudden impulse. He didn't have these frequently, right? But when he did have them, somebody actually died?
Right. And I really wasn't paying it a whole lot of attention, you know, what was going on, until my foster father, who I was real close to, was he had a terminal illness, and we all knew he was going to pass away. He was dying of cancer over on Whidbey Island, and I went over there, and I said, hey, I've got to go. I've got to get ready right now, and I threw my things together and took off, and I had this vision, one of the first visions I've had, and I've had quite a few since, but there was this airplane. It looked like a tiny toy airplane, and these three huge angels behind it. And then you could see inside this airplane and these passengers, but this one passenger, I couldn't see their face, and it was like a real tiny airplane, and he was wearing a gray jacket. Well, my husband had to work overtime and said that he couldn't go to see my father, and they were real close. Well, he came, there was a knock at the door, and I looked out, and there he was, and I was really didn't think anything of it, and I opened up the door, and there was this terrible feeling of death that just went right through me. And my foster brother, who was a nurse, literally ran down the hall, and he said, don't let me get him ready for you first. And I just got terrified, and I took a look at his face, and I said, well, let's go across the street and see the kids, because they were staying at the neighbors. And halfway through the clearing, I felt my father die. And I just felt so horrible when I felt his spirit, you know, just leave. And, of course, I knew my dad was dead, and I went and tried to get him involved with, looking, you know, seeing the children. When we got back, my mom was having a glass of high cherry wine. Dad had always made wine himself, and she looked right at my husband's face, and she just with hate in her eyes, and she said, well, he's dead, you know, like he had been the one to kill him. And all of a sudden, I remember that vision of that gray coat, and I looked at my husband. He was wearing that gray jacket, and it was him. He was coming, you know, in that tiny plane. And that's how he had gotten there. He had flown there, chartered a small plane to come into Woodville and taken a taxi and come to the house. And all of a sudden, all the pieces fit together, and I looked back, and I thought, oh, my God, you know, he told me that he was going down the hall right before his father died.
Well, listen, we're out of time, but if ever a woman had reason not to see an ex... if you hear he's on the way to visit you, I'd grab the nearest passport and be headed out.
I think I will.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. And while we're on the subject of airplanes, I have a very good friend that works for one of the major airlines in this country, maybe the biggest airline, actually. And... there are some planes, and I'm intentionally not going to tell you which airline it is. Actually, they've made movies about it. But because of the violent nature of airplane crashes, companies that have been in the business for a very long time and have had crashes know planes are haunted. There are some... bone-chilling stories to be told about haunted airplanes. And because I don't want to compromise something that's been told to me, I'm not going to pass it on to you. I'm just going to say, believe it. There are some airplanes that are that have more flying than just the paying passengers, let me put it that way. Good morning. On the first time caller line, you're on the air.
This is Alan from Birmingham, Alabama.
Alan from Birmingham. Hi, Alan. How you doing?
Still doing the stuff on the ghost stories?
Oh, we sure are, Alan.
All right. Well, I got one for you.
All right.
All right. Me and my best friend, ever since we met, we've been having like strange occurrences happening whenever we're around each other.
Right.
And, you know, we could, like, know what each other's thinking, and if something happens to one of us, you know, the other knows about it and things like that.
Sure.
Well, he joined the Army about 2.5 years ago.
Alan, Yeah. I have a break coming up right now. Might I ask that you hold through it so we can get your whole story in?
Okay.
All right, good. Stay right where you are. That's Alan in Birmingham, Alabama. Back with us in a moment.
Replay of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. This program originally aired October 30th, 1993. Please do not call.
Welcome back, everybody, to a night of, well, she expressed it well. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM, back to Birmingham, Alabama now. Good morning. You're back on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, all right. Okay. So, me and my best friend Lance, it's like, you know, we always kind of have like sort of like the same dreams and stuff, but we was always wondering how this happened and stuff. So he got hurt while he was in basic training, and he had a convalescence leave, and I was living in Huntsville at the time.
Right.
And we was always wondering why this was happening and everything. And one night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, all these dogs in the neighborhood started barking, and, you know, we was wondering what was going on. So we walked outside and looked around and couldn't see nothing. Also, we looked up in this tree, and there was these red glowing eyes. It was real freaky.
Red glowing eyes?
Yeah. Okay. And about that time, the dog shut up, and the whole neighborhood went black. We kept finding out the next day all Southeast Huntsville was in a blackout. And all of a sudden, there was this white Bengal tiger, like a shadow, walked up in the yard.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, it transformed into this man. He was Egyptian. And he said his name was Ptolemy, which I found out there was a real, he's an Egyptian astrologer and mathematician named Ptolemy that lived back in 300 AD or something like that. And he told us that what he was, who he was, and everything, and that things like this would happen, and sooner or later he would tell us why and show us why. And ever since then, we like have dreams about him and everything, and it's real weird because we'll like be dreaming.
So he, in other words, he's never really left you.
Right. It's like he said he'd be there to protect us and things like that. And Lance has had occurrences where he's protected him while he's been in Germany and everything. But one of the strangest ones was last Christmas he was at home, and me and him was out sitting in the living room and was going to leave and go outside down to his parents' house. And what happened is I went to open the door, and as soon as I opened the door, it's like both me and him went flying back into the middle of the living room. The door shut, and about 20 seconds later, a car came by with a drive-by shooting.
Oh. Well, that's quite a story.
Yeah. It's kind of freaked us both out.
I understand, and I thank you for adding to the series of stories this morning.
But the thing about it is he's in Germany, I'm here. We've been both having real weird dreams lately, and I talked to him about 4 days ago. He's telling me about his dreams and the same ones I'm having.
Well, maybe there's more to go to this story. Keep us informed, all right?
All right.
Thank you, my friend. Line two, you're on the air.
Morning, can you hear me?
I can hear you, but not well.
Let me see if I can make it better.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, much better, yes.
Okay. What I'm going to tell you, I've never told anyone before. It's started many years ago. I was born in 1949 mm-hmm. In April. And April 5th, 1952, 5 days before my third birthday, my older brother died. The only memories I really have of him is him laying in his coffin. He was buried 2 days before my third birthday, and on my third birthday, he came back and talked to me. Now, I was a very little child, but I remember that very clearly. Since that time, and I'm 44 years old now, every April 10th, no matter where I have been in this world, he always comes back and talks to me again.
How? I mean, what form does he take? How does this happen?
He looks exactly like he did the day he died. He looks like a four-year-old child. And it doesn't matter where I am. When I was in Vietnam, it doesn't make any difference. All I have to do is be by myself for even just a few seconds. On my birthday, he always comes and talks to me, and he always tells me. He doesn't tell me anything that, you know, is really revealing anything. He just tells me if everything's going to be okay and not to worry about it.
How do you handle that? I mean,
Well, it's been ever since I was a little tiny child, so it's normal for me. I mean, I don't tell anybody about this. I wouldn't be telling you if it wasn't on the...
What about your parents?
Who I am.
I know. What about your parents?
As far as I know, they never have any... Nobody's... Like, he always told me to not tell anybody, so I don't... I've never heard anybody else say anything about it, so I don't know. I just know that he talks to me every April 10th on my birthday.
That's incredible. I'll tell you, I'm honored that you decided to tell us.
Well, like I said, I wouldn't tell you if you could know who I am, because he told me not to tell anybody, but like this, where you can't know who I am, it's okay.
Thank you for the story.
You're welcome.
Good morning. Well, what do you think about that? Sound credible to you? Sound like someone who was just calling to jerk our chain? I don't think so. Same way I feel about most all the calls we've had this morning. This has been very good. If you've listened to all this, I think that you've got to be sitting there wondering about all this. Hi there. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello? No, are you there? Last chance.
Yes.
You are. Where are you, sir?
I'm calling from Denver.
Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the program.
Yes. One thing about the ghost story thing, I was hardly ever a believer. Growing up as a Christian, I was for the most part taught not to believe in that. Back in 1984, I was dating a lady, and she had told me that through some friends of the family, she had the opportunity to go out to an old farmhouse south of the Denver area, and there was an opportunity for her to pick up some old leaded glass, some white fixtures, and some chandeliers from an old farmhouse that was on the property out there, so I agreed to go out there with her. We had gone to the old boarded up farmhouse, and bear in mind all of the windows and the doors had been boarded over with 2x4s. And I went to the front door. She was staying in the car. It was, I think, probably about zero out, and this was the first part of November. But we had got inside the house and went in there, and we were looking around at the different ornate fixtures that were in the home. And I looked into the kitchen, and I thought I could see a little boy about, 4 or 5 years old. And I looked over there, and for a brief second, I was sure that I thought I saw a little boy there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came and went, and I didn't think, at the time, I thought, well, maybe I was just imagining it. Well, another 5 minutes went by, and we were walking through there, and I looked over to Shelley, and I said, you know, I thought I saw a little boy in here. And she said, oh, don't worry about it. You're dreaming, this, that, and the other. And I walked into another adjoining room where the chandelier was, and had grabbed a little step stool and was getting ready to get up on that. And Shelley let out this blood-curdling scream and came running in, and she said, there's a little boy in here. And I said, I thought I saw something too. So we walked around on the bottom floor of the old farmhouse, and I said, if you'll be real quiet, if we could hear him running through here, you know, we might be able to grab him and find out what's going on, because at these temperatures, the little guy's going to freeze to death in here.
Mm-hmm.
We searched through the house, the stairway. I was standing by the stairway to the second floor, so I know that nobody could have walked past me. And we just decided at that time that maybe we both saw something, or possibly a cupboard door or something caused shadow.
Mutual hallucination, something.
Apparently, and we didn't think too much about it at that time. Well, I had taken the fixture down and had deglazed some cabinet doors that had the beveled glass in it. And we went outside, and I ran into a friend of mine who works for the power company. And he had saw my rig out there, and he was sitting out in his pickup making a radio call. And when we walked out there and got in our rig, he said, he didn't know if Shelley was my wife or not. I hadn't seen him for a while.
All right, we're almost out of time here.
I'll speed it up. Anyway, we had left and gone up to the new home that was built on this farm. It was built in about the 60s. We went up there to thank the people and got to meet the matriarch of the family, and her name was Grandma Ann. Wonderful lady. We went in there, we spoke to people, and we said thank you for letting us have those fixtures. Shelley had walked in there to where her grandmother's little, I guess, room, bedroom, you would call it, next to a den. And we looked down, and we saw a little picture of the boy and two girls.
Oh, boy. All right, I've got to hold it there. Thank you. So there was the boy. There was the boy. That's an incredible story. People coming back. People never leaving. People who die, whose spirits remain here for some troubling reason, usually troubling. What a remarkable string of stories this morning. Good morning. On our first time caller line, you're on the air. From where are you calling, please?
I'm calling from Seattle, KVI.
Seattle, yes, sir.
This happened about 11 years ago. I had a girlfriend who had been killed in a car accident by a drunk driver. She had gotten in the accident on August 18th, and on August 20th, she had been pronounced dead 2 months before her 20th birthday.
Mm.
On Halloween night exactly, there was a party at the house where she had used to live. everyone had her roommates had decided to have a party to try and get over the grieving process and whatnot.
Yes.
We had hired a band out of Everett, and I was over at the house to let the band in. And the band that had came, nobody knew about Lisa that had died. And the head singer for the band had gone into the bathroom back by Lisa's bedroom. It was a female with dark hair. Lisa had had red hair. Mm-hmm. She was in the bathroom combing her hair, and she let out a scream like I have never heard before in my life. I went running back there, and she's standing there in the mirror, just white as could be. And she looked at me and she said, "Somebody has died here." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she goes, "I looked into the mirror and it wasn't my face."
Uh-huh.
And then she said, she described Lisa right to a T. And she walked out of the bathroom and turned and looked right at Lisa's room and said, "That's her room." Well, the first thing I thought was that these people were trying to play a very sick joke. And got together with a couple other people and were talking about it, and this girl from the band kept wanting to leave. And before she had gone into the bathroom, she had been so excited about playing this gig. Later in the evening, I was standing in Lisa's bedroom talking to somebody, and I looked into the window and saw her reflection from behind me and heard her voice asking me to leave. And I left the party. And then later that night, over $10,000 damage was done to that house by people getting out of hand. And I just really believe, and, you know, just sitting here recalling it, I get the shakes like I did that night. And I just really believe that she had came back not wanting people sitting there getting drunk.
I'm kind of curious about something. How has this affected your spiritual life since that time? What's your belief system like? I mean, are you now absolutely convinced that there is another life?
Oh, yes. I've been convinced. When I was a child, my parents owned a mobile home, and they had always told us that this mobile home was haunted and have always told this story. And we always thought they were kidding with us, trying to scare us and whatnot. And until this happened, I really didn't believe it. And you know, I still get the shakes. I'm sitting here shaking now, thinking about it.
Hearing these other stories must be a very reinforcing experience for you.
Yes, it is.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
And good morning. And if you're just joining us, welcome to the program. We're telling ghost stories. Real ones. The place where Halloween is really occurring. Right here. It's called Coast to Coast AM. Good morning. Line 3, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Some incredible stories tonight. This is Margaret at Grants Pass, Oregon. But anyway, my story dates back to 1945. And
The year of my birth, I might add.
Oh, you're that old? Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
well, I'm 71.
Are you that old?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Anyway, my husband had commando training. I knew he was going into battle in the Navy and advanced echelon, and I was just worried sick over him when he left, because I didn't know where he was going, what was happening and everything, you know, and I went with a friend of mine down to Alvera Street. And I don't believe in fortune telling or anything. Well, maybe I do a little bit now. But anyway, then we went into this fortune teller, and she was listening to a young girl who was there with a sailor, after she was through, I said, "Well, I didn't want to rush her or anything, you know." And she says, "Well, that's okay." All she wanted was find out whether the boy liked her or something like that, you know.
Sure.
So then I told her, you know, that I was worried about my husband, and we had only been married a short time, and she said not to worry about him, to take care of myself, that he would be just fine, but just take care of myself, you know. So I didn't think too much of it, but sometime later I went by myself to an elderly man in Maywood, in southeast L.A., and he was a fortune teller, and after he told me that he was going to be just fine and I should take care of myself, and called me all the way out to the car, kept telling me, now you watch out, you take care of yourself.
Well, how come you didn't turn around and say, why? I mean, what's going to happen to me? I think I'd have to ask.
Yeah, well, I just didn't believe in fortune tellers, you know. I just
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking same message, two tellers.
Yeah, that's right, but I didn't link them together.
Really. All right, we don't have a lot of time, so what happened?
Well, what happened was that VJ, they came, and he was just fine, and everything was going great, and in October, I had a dream that this factory I worked at... I was up on a mountain, and I was looking down, and there was a big explosion, and I rushed down there, and there was one guy sitting there, and he said, everybody got killed but me.
Oh.
And about a week later, I was involved in an explosion, and I was the only one that was hurt. And I was in the hospital, and I think the first day they had a horrible heat streak, and I asked God, I said, please let me die. This heat is terrible because all the good hospitals were filled up, and this was...
All right, we're about to not be able to continue, so I'm going to have to say we'll hold it there. Call me next hour if you can get through. Thank you. I'm sorry, but that's the end of the time. But not the end of the program, by any means. The place where Halloween is really occurring, right here. It's called Coast to Coast AM.
An old cowboy was riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, plowing through the ragged sky, and up a cloudy draw. Their brands were still on fire, and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny, and their hot breath he could feel.